Good morning and welcome to a Friday Food for Thought program here on KKCQ. And joining us live in the studio is Mike Brouse. We've had Mike on the program before. And Mike, today we're talking about some threats to the pro-life movement. And we appreciate your time and thanks for joining us on Food for Thought.
Sure, Tom. I'm happy to be here. Probably not the most ideal topic to be talking about, but, you know, I've been a pro-life advocate for a long time, but I've never really felt like the members of the pro-life movement or the pro-life movement itself was under a serious threat until recently. I think that that's probably been something that has escalated since Joe Biden was elected. I think it's something that's escalated since the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade was leaked. And we've seen those attacks against, and we've seen attacks against the movement in the form of attacks against churches, pro-life pregnancy centers, maternity homes, political organizations, and other organizations. And they've escalated across, I think, the entire country in the form of graffiti, property damage, written threats, theft, and in one case, I know for sure, even arson. So I think those are the kinds of attacks that you see by individuals, or maybe in some cases, organizations, but they're non-governmental organizations. And what I find more disturbing than those kinds of attacks are what I see is the attack on the pro-life movement by government. Government, its big tech allies, its media allies. And let's be candid. I think that those are pro-abortion actions taken by the government, the media, and big tech that are really an implementation, in my mind, of the Democrat political agenda. And I think the reason I find that so disturbing is that the actions that are taken by the government and its media allies is that they really represent a fundamental change on the role those institutions have played. I think the media was once considered to be the fourth estate, you know, the check on the branches of government. Now it's an ally, and some would claim a propaganda arm. And the power of government, I think specifically the law enforcement agencies, DOJ and the FBI nationally, and our attorney general at the state level, have become tools, on the one hand, to promote the pro-abortion cause or narrative, and weapons, on the other hand, to undermine and attack the pro-life narrative. And these are things that we have not seen, certainly on the part of government in the past. I think, and this is, I should make clear that I'm speaking for myself today, because if I say something controversial, I don't want it ascribed to the Chapter 45 over in Macintosh of MCCL, but I will tell you, in my opinion, the actions taken by the government against the pro-life movement are more characteristic of a police state, I think, than a functioning democracy. And in that regard, I think you can fairly argue that with respect to this country's descent into the realms of police state policies, the pro-life movement is probably the canary in the coal mine. The government's attack on the pro-life movement is, I think, reflective of a much broader march against anything that is counter to the progressive narrative, and really is a harbinger of, in my opinion, you know, more to follow. And I know people are going to question that, and by way of example, let me tell you about a couple things. A March 1st report that was compiled by the Director of National Intelligence warned that, and I'll quote this, domestic violent extremists, what they refer to as DVEs, who are motivated by a range of ideologies and galvanized by recent political and social events in the United States pose an elevated threat to the homeland in 2021. And this report specifically singled out, quote, abortion-related domestic violent extremists, referring to DVEs with ideological agendas in support of pro-life or pro-choice beliefs as examples of groups that may pose a national security threat. And of course, now we have disclosures that the FBI has been investigating and characterizing traditional Catholics as violent extremists without any evidence of criminal activity, which is incredible. The Catholic Church, of course, is especially the more traditional conservative elements, is expressly pro-life and anti-abortion. The other part of that, conversely, is when the government does have actual crimes, such as the attacks on the pro-life facilities and those organizations, the FBI won't even reveal to what extent they're being investigated. They won't tell us how many arrests have been made, if any. I'm not aware of any prosecutions of perpetrators that have committed crimes against pro-life organizations of any kind. I know local law enforcement agencies have made some arrests, but not our federal agencies. I think the probably one of the most egregious examples of the failure of the Department of Justice and the FBI to enforce the laws are the laws that prohibit protesting at the residences of Supreme Court justices. They have done nothing to enforce laws against clear violations by people who are protesting at the homes of the justices, notwithstanding the fact it's USC section 1507 that is the federal law prohibiting those kinds of protests. Yet the Department of Justice not only not enforced that law, but has offered no explanation whatsoever of why it has not enforced it. But I want to get to probably what I think is the most serious and significant example of police state tactics. And this was clearly an example that I think was meant to be a shot across the bow of the pro-life movement, and that's the Mark Haupt case. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me give you the details of that, because I think that highlights the extent to which this government is prepared to go in order to impede the pro-life movement and I think advance the pro-abortion agenda. This started in October of 2021. Mark Houck, who is a longtime pro-life sidewalk counselor, was lawfully protesting down the street from a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic with his son. An abortion clinic escort named Bruce Love leaves the clinic entrance area, walks over to Houck's son, and begins hassling the kid. Mark tries twice to end that harassment by Love because his son is clearly afraid of this guy, this escort. The second time, when Love tries to approach the boy, Houck gives him a shove to keep him away, and Love falls to the ground. As a result of that, Love files assault charges against Houck. The case is set for trial in what they call a municipal court in Pennsylvania. But Love fails to show up. He cared so little that he failed to show up. So, of course, the municipal court dismisses the charges. Shortly after that, Houck gets a notice that he's the target of a federal grand jury investigation. His attorney notifies the federal government lawyers that upon their request, Mark will personally and peacefully show up at the agency headquarters and will be prepared for questioning and any kind of further investigation. Mark hears nothing from the feds until almost a year later. September 23rd, at 6:45 a.m. in the morning, he's in bed. He hears a pounding on his door, and the doorbell is ringing repeatedly, and someone is demanding that he, quote, open up. He asks whoever it is outside his door to identify himself, and he's told it's the FBI. He goes to the door. Now, keep in mind, he's been in bed. He's got his shorts on. He goes to the door, opens the door, and you can't believe it's a circus outside. You got 20, at least 20, heavily armed state and federal agents. You got 10 marked and unmarked vehicles right in front, cars lined up. It's 100 yards to his house in the front. Cars are lined up for that full 100 yards to the street. Long guns, in other words, rifles, pointed at him, men in heavily armored vests and ballistic helmets carrying ballistic shields and a battering ram. Now, this is after his attorney has notified the feds that he's willing to show up peacefully. All they got to do is ask. There were at least five federal agents on the porch with M16s pointed at him, and then at his wife when she enters the room. He's arrested at that point wearing flip-flops, a pair of shorts, I'll just add, no underwear, and a T-shirt. And meanwhile, his seven children are there, some of whom are crying and screaming. The agents take him into custody. They don't allow him to put on any other clothing. They don't allow him to brush his teeth, put on deodorant, nothing. And if you look back at some of the arrests that have been made by the FBI that were publicized, I mean, news agencies were notified, et cetera, that is so typical for the political arrests. They'll, you know, take you out in your pajamas, put you in chains, and take you off, in some cases, of course, with a lot of public fanfare because news agencies have been notified. In Mark's case, he gets to the federal building, and he's shackled at the waist and the feet once he gets there. What he referred to as just a pure act of humiliation. So what's the crime? The crime he's charged with is violation of the FACE Act, which is the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. And it prohibits violent, threatening, damaging, and obstructive conduct, and here's the key word, intended to injure, intimidate, or interfere with the right to seek, obtain, or provide reproductive health services. And that violation of that act, Tom, carries a penalty of 11 years imprisonment. Now, this is charged against a guy whose original charge was thrown out by a municipal court because of the so-called victim's failure to appear. So prior to trial, this drags on for quite a while, prior to trial, the government offers Houck a plea deal. And what they tell him is, look, plead guilty and you walk away with virtually no punishment other than a virtual slap on the wrist. The thing is, Houck is a very committed Christian. He's a very ardent pro-lifer. He knows that if he takes the deal, he's going to create a precedent that will adversely affect not only other sidewalk counselors, but the pro-life movement in general. So he refuses the offer. And he stares the 11 years in the face. The feds send in their best FACE prosecutor to try the case. Despite all of that, it took the jury about an hour to acquit Houck of the charges. There was a video taken of that incident, at least a substantial part of it. If you look at that video, you will see why that jury didn't take much more time than it took to decide who was going to be the foreman and what was the issue, and away they went and acquitted him. You'll see why that was done that way and why the federal charges were ridiculous and clearly political, because of the intent factor. You can see clearly He was not instigating this. He was not interfering with anyone. The escort from the Planned Parenthood facility was off the premises, away from the entrance. There was nothing Houck did other than defend his son. So my point of I guess, telling people about this is that, to state a truism, you know, elections have consequences. And because of it, that's why we have progressive leaders at the helm right now at the federal level and even at the state level. And that explains why we've got a government that's at both the state and federal level that's advancing a pro-abortion agenda and actively impeding the pro-life cause. And what people often don't realize, and I do because I was at one time an attorney, it isn't just the incarceration penalty that is a threat and a deterrent to advancing the pro-life cause. The government doesn't even have to win. I mean, think about the Houck case. He was lucky. He had a public interest organization defend him, but that's not going to be true for most people.
Right.
And the reason the government doesn't have to win, they only have to bring the charges because the financial burden of defense costs is enough to break most middle-class people.
Sure.
And it's that threat alone that is a sufficient deterrent in most cases. And the government, of course, on the other hand, not only has a bottomless war chest, it's your money, man. You're playing against your own money when you go up against the government.
Say, I was wondering, do you think that was a plan by the so-called victim to not show up for that hearing so this circus could all occur? Or?
You know, I never thought about that. I'm probably not as conspiracy oriented as I should be.
But I mean, when you think about it, I mean, look what happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a total pretext case.
Yeah.
Sure. Anyway, that's what I wanted to make clear to people today, is that we have a government that has an agenda, and that agenda is contrary to, I think, some of the most fundamental values that we hold, at least if you're conservative.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, thanks a lot for stopping by. Very interesting.
Yeah,
interesting,
it was to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll talk to you again on Food for Thought, but thanks for sharing your time.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It was good as usual. Thanks.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
That's going to wrap it up for our Food for Thought program. Thanks again to Mike Brouse stopping by and joining us on Food for Thought. And we'll have our regularly scheduled MCCL update coming up on Monday. And then Clearwater County Sheriff Darren Halverson will be joining us for his monthly update Tuesday on Food for Thought here on KKCQ. We'll take a short break and we'll run through the birthdays and your weather eye forecast in just a little bit here on KKCQ.
Hi, I'm Jake Berkmeyer, inviting R&J listeners to join me